Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Now, Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikesure will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping you save money on your annual bike, scooter and moped insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Now, today's guest genuinely is someone we've wanted to get on here for absolutely ages. I'm chuffed we've finally achieved it today. Listen to this. He's a TV presenter, a TV producer, a film director, an author, an adventurer, a creator of motorcycles, and a champion, basically, of anything on two wheels. It is the one and only Mr. Henry Cole.
Ewan, thank you so much, man. I got lost there, really. I didn't see myself in any of that. But anyway, there you go.
Oh, no, honestly, it's a pleasure. Isn't it, Dave? Dave, seriously, perhaps we've wanted him for ages, haven't we?
So we have.
Yeah, I'm excited.
We like that. You are so kind. I'll believe you, okay? Millions wouldn't, but I believe you. Hey, look, it's great to be here anyway.
And the fact, Henry, that you are, I mean, polymath doesn't quite do you justice because you do so many different things in so many different places. And the fact that you're joining us now, given all the telework and building motorcycles, currently on tour with Steve Parrish, a friend of the pod who's been on it before.
At the time
of recording, you've just done Swindon, Southend and Newark as your first
this
three.
Week. Yeah. In fact, my voice has dissipated because of Newark last night. Actually, it was quite raucous and a lot of fun. Do you know what? It's great about going out on tour, mainly because, you know, I'm quite insular, right? Because obviously, if you're making TV, you know, right? If you're making TV and you're in sheds and, you know, you're working with Fuzz and Alan and Guy or whatever and Parrish, I suppose, you're very sort of in your own little world, you know? So what's great is to go out into the audience or go and meet people. And we've got this talk, you know, that's going on throughout the whole of this year. And would you believe, like, it goes through till November, but I mean, a lot of the gigs are sold out. It's amazing to me. But what's lovely for me is meeting kindred spirits like yourselves and whoever, you know, it doesn't matter who we all are, yeah, which is all enjoy motorcycling and being in sheds. That sounds a bit odd.
It's true, though. There's nothing like actually meeting people from all different walks of life who have that common bond, that common interest. Because like you said, the TV world, it's not real. It's fake. It's full of like showbizy bits and pieces. But when you actually see the whites of people's eyes and you can see them and they're coming to listen to you talk, and I'm sure you and Steve have got many entertaining stories. It must be nice for you to meet and be, you know, see the appreciation people have for you and the work you do.
Oh, I can't quite believe that, if you see what I mean. I mean, the thing is, the reason why I started TV presenting is I really didn't like TV presenters, yeah? because I spent like 15, 20 years before that directing TV presenters. And generally, right, I'm sure you two not included, but me included, I can be an arrogant, you know, selfish, opinionated, stubborn. Well, you know, I mean, you've met them. And so when my whole life fell apart after making a movie, which went horribly wrong, I went to Channel 5. I was chatting with my mate Jeff and I said, I want to do these shows and I want to present. He said, we're not interested. I said, please let me present it because I hate other presenters. I'm done with directing them. Yeah. And so that's kind of how it started, really. Interesting how life goes, isn't it?
You mentioned that, and I was chatting to you before we came on air, and obviously in the days of DVDs, your World's Greatest Motorcycle Rides were my absolute go-to.
Were they?
I mean, a very good friend of mine who lives over in America now. Yeah, I mean, when you were slightly younger, single men with not much else to do when you while on a few hours, like I could devour them all, and it was the ones where like you're in Florida and it's chucking it down, you're on a massive chopper with an open face helmet on, and you're cracking on, and I was saying to our production team just before we came, I loved obviously the bikes that you were on, I loved where you were on these bikes, I loved your interaction with. I don't know whether it was someone from Middle America who was, hey, you know what I mean? That very typical English gent chatting to two worlds colliding. I couldn't remember the name of, there was a young producer that was with you.
Hamish.
Hamish. And he was obviously, you were obviously very close. You obviously had a very good working relationship.
Are.
But the odd occasion when you'd rip him a new one in a car park somewhere for not quite getting the right shot or being in the right place, I just found it. I just loved the whole thing, mate. I loved it.
I think the whole thing is, look, that, you know, motorcycle adventuring, to me anyway, is something about being out there on your own as best you can with the TV crew, yeah, and actually experiencing the culture, the ride, the people, etc. But, you know, I mean, look, Charlie and Ewan did it with a load of people, yeah. We have always done it, just me, Hamish and a cameraman, yeah, and a truck. And, yeah, sure, look, there's a can of fuel in the truck, yeah. I make no bones about that. But at the same time, you know, in Australia, we have had a situation where the truck has run out of fuel and the bike. You know what I mean? Because basically we're totally untogether and there's no sort of media person going with a clipboard going, you should fill up the petrol can. You know what I mean? So, you know, we kind of... But the thing is that motorcycling for me is about that inclusivity, if you see what I mean. And what I don't know about you guys, but I hear that the motorcycle industry is in the doldrums and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, the major Japanese manufacturers say to me, oh, Henry, well, we're really after the youth vote. You know, we really want to get young people into motorcycling. My response is that they won't get into motorcycling until they're about 45, 50. Right?
Yeah.
If they do, probably earlier than that, there's quite the danger of them never getting to 45 or 50. Yeah. But actually what you should be doing is targeting, you know, people younger than me, I'm 60, but, you know, 45s, 40s, because when you get to that age, you got a bit of wedge, yeah, you hopefully got a bit of freedom, yeah, the wife or your partner may well want to come with you on a ride, do you know what I mean, hopefully, or you can get a single seat and go on your own. But the bottom line is that, you know, you're able to enjoy motorcycling, you've got a bit more time perhaps, yeah? So consequently, I think it's wrong that they're targeting the young kids, do you know what I mean? Because the route to market is horrific for people, it's so expensive.
If you go for 40-year-olds and stuff, I don't know about you, but I think for a lot of people, motorcycling is a bit of a release, escapism from the real
absolutely
world. You get your helmet on,
right.
You can forget about the stresses of work or married life or whatever it might be. And I think the beauty of going out on a bike, as you say, it's not all about an 18-year-old tearing around on a 125 or whatever it might be now, but it's about freedom, expressing yourself and just having a bit of you time. Because we all have such busy lifestyles. That's the beauty of motorcycling, the bond we all have. Whatever your ability on a bike, you love the same things about it.
Absolutely. And also you're out there on your own. Do you know what I mean? How do people say to me, why do you like motorcycling? I say, well, look, you know, on a motor, in a car, right, you're a spectator, right? Okay. Through this sort of sheet of glass. Yeah. So if it's cold, turn the heating up. If you're hungry, you have a jelly baby. Yeah. If you want to listen to Richard Clayderman, you can. Yeah. Obviously, that's questionable. But on a motorcycle, you're actually taking part in the scenery. OK, you're hot, you're cold, you get flies in your face. You can't really start. You know, you've got to stop for something, whether it's a cigarette or whether it's, you know, to have a pee. Or, well, I suppose you've got to stop. With them. But anyway, you know what I mean? You are taking part in the journey. Right, rather than being a spectator, which I do feel as though you are in a car. Do you know what I mean?
I love that. I've never thought about that. We had Chris Akabusi on one of our series, and he described the smells and the textures of the road. But being part of the scenery, that's a lovely descriptive way of pointing it out. To a non-biker, they won't get it. Because you just think it's a mode of transport from A to B, but it's not. I don't use my bike to get from A to anywhere. I just use it to go and be on my own. So it's part of the scenery. I love that.
I mean, I think the other issue is, as far as I'm concerned with motorcycling, is they're sort of trying to outlaw it, or I mean, they're not, but you know, they're always, the beanies are always against us. And the bottom line is that, hang on a second, surely motorcycling is the solution, not the problem, right? In the sense, if everyone had a bike, yeah, there wouldn't be, you know, we'd be more ozone friendly, right? Yeah. Firstly, secondly, there'd be no traffic jams. Yeah. And thirdly, you know, we are kind to the environment. And the bottom line is that, you know, I really think motorcycling should be looked at, especially in the congestion of London and all that kind of stuff, is something to celebrate, not to basically try and outlaw by basically making it so expensive to get into biking. And also, I think people do see motorcycling still slightly socially unacceptable. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah,
but then again,
yeah, I'd agree
as bikers, perhaps one likes that little bit of rebellion about it all. You know, that individualism is critical for me. And again, why I got into biking, you know what I mean?
There's that element as well, which is it doesn't sound twee, nor is it needlessly immature, but there is something inherently cool for whatever your definition of cool is about biking. And that's, that's what kind of stuck me in with the sights, the sounds, the smells, the fashion around it, the look of it. Everything that you're saying there, Henry, I absolutely agree with. The other part about it is because we're so plugged in to everyone all the time, getting out on your bike, shoving your phone in your pocket, done. You know what I mean? Give me an hour away from it. Give me 2 hours away from this thing that sucks all your kind of everyone into doing it. I mean, the irony being that somebody might be watching this right now on a phone. Please carry on doing what you're doing. That's absolutely fine. But that sense of escapism and getting yourself away from that. Is that a theme potentially that you're chatting about with the tour? And just to go back to the tour, let me just give you a shout out for I'm sure you know where you're going, but if people are listening that need to know where you're going, you're going to...
Hang on
tour till mid-November, visiting Peterborough, Barnstaple, Launceston, Paint and Douglas on the Isle of Man during the TT. That's wonderful.
Look.
Wimborne, Redditch, Stamford. Have you got it on there?
I've got Stamford, that, look, there.
Hereford, Chelmsford, Lancaster, Hexham,
and given it to
Chatham.
Me.
Yes.
Chatham,
HenryCole.tv is where we can find that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, great. Look, honestly, if you just go on to HenryCole.tv, you'll find out where we are. I have to say, book early to avoid disappointment. I mean, really, it's all quite booked out, and which I mean, to me, is quite anathema. And I can't thank people enough for wanting to sort of take up one of their evenings listening to me drivel on about my life. I must say, my life has been quite eclectic. You know, I'm a bit of a posher, and I went to Eton, you know, and with David Cameron and Boris Johnson, etc. I think really, actually thinking about, I was talking about this last night in the show, you know, I think Eton breeds three people, kinds of people, right? They breed captains of industry, yeah, which I've yet to meet any of my contemporaries who were, but they tell me they do. Politicians, right? And junkies. And I obviously fell into the third category of old Etonian, where I was a professional heroin addict for 5 years.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Well, do you know what, Henry? It's never too late. You might run this country yet, mate. You've still got a few years left in you.
I do think... Do you know what? That's really weird. You know, I don't know about you, mate, and you perhaps, but like, because you're on the box or you're an iconic runner or, you know, you talk crap about motorcycles, people then think that you have a political view about things and you need to... I don't, all right? I'm a biker. Okay, so people ask me questions. Go, don't try and catch me out, mate. All right? Okay, whatever political views I have, they're not worth telling you, firstly. And secondly, I'm a biker, you know? I live in a shed, right?
You're a bit more of a bike than a biker, though, really.
No,
I was thinking earlier, I think you'd be the ideal neighbour. You'd hate me because I'm useless at everything. But I get the sense you're the man who could fix anything. My dishwasher's broken. Yeah,
no,
we'll sort out. My fence has fallen down. He'll do it, you know?
You got it completely wrong. Okay. I mean, honestly, mate, I'll tell you what, the joys of television. But I really, you got it all wrong. Okay. So let's look at that. Okay. I've got Alan Milliard, I've got Fuzz Townsend, I've got Skid Willison, right? Okay, those three between them could basically build a space rocket, right? And Alan would try and fly it, but probably crash it. I drink tea, and my métier is to bring all those people together as like-minded mates in a shed, you know. And yes, I can restore stuff, and I probably could. It would take me a couple of days, probably fix your washing machine. Yeah, probably take Guy, who used to fix washing machines, probably about 10 minutes, right? But at the same time, I could tell you a few stories and that kind of caper, so it could be quite fun. Rather like my builder, right, Paul? He said 6 weeks to do the kitchen. 9 months later, he was still having a cup of tea there, you know?
Just you talking to each other.
And we love him, but... God almighty, he's slow.
It must be nice, though. You're working with such eclectic, interesting people that you must pick knowledge from them. Like, jokes aside, you're clearly more capable than I am at probably 99% of the things in the world.
Well,
but it must be nice to be around people. And I'm assuming in your line of work, you know, be it touring, be it, you know, find it, fix it, flog it, those kind of programs, I love them. No 2 days are the same, surely, because you're working on different problems and you're making different solutions. I love it.
Absolutely. Look, man, I have the dream job. It changes every day. You know, like Stuart, my producer, will send me out on Monday to go to a shed where I'm probably going to buy, what am I buying? A van. Okay, so I might buy a classic van. And then on Tuesday, we're going to restore a trials car I've got. Then on Wednesday, we've got a CB900 that needs sorting out. So, look, the bottom line is we're filming, I think, like 73 shows. I mean, like crazy. And the new series of Shed and Bury Classic Cars starts on the 17th, actually.
The motorbike show as well. I mean, the list goes on and on
Yeah, it does. So we're doing Shed and Bury Classic Cars, Shed and Bury Big Stuff. I'm restoring a helicopter. Don't do that. All right, please don't do that. We're doing Junk and Disorderly, that as well as ITV can be seen on Blaze as of the end of this coming up. What else do we do? Yeah, Find It, Fix It, Flog It on You and Yesterday and Channel 4. Anyway, look, it just goes on. And we are ultimately privileged. The only thing that stresses me out, because I have to direct it all, yeah, is the schedule. Schedule's a nightmare, yeah? So, look, if I'm honest, don't tell Discovery this, okay? But Shed and Bury Classic Cars, we're just looking at the board here, that goes out on Monday, starts going out Monday. Okay, did start going out wherever on the 17th, right? We've still got two shows to make, all right? Okay, so we've done 8 and we've got 2 more left. God knows where we're going, but we'll find a way. So that's the schedule that we keep. The worst we've ever done, actually, was deliver the motorbike show to ITV 3 hours before transmission.
Ooh. My God.
Yeah, it was a bit tight. But, you know, so look, it's the schedule that drives me. And that's what everyone has a cross to bear. Mine is schedule. Yeah. And staying alive at the age of 61. But then you look at Alan Milliard and Guy, who are decomposing in front of me on the screen. Yeah. And I think, well, don't look too bad. You know?
Henry, you strike me as given your approach to life. You mentioned obviously the coming out of Eton and it being a certain way for you, as opposed to, I mean, saying that there's a sliding scale of how you judge the politicians in all of our lives, isn't it, with regards to their success rate in the real world. But you strike me as a man that's very quick to say yes and yep. then work out how to do the thing that you've said yes to off the back of that. Of course we can do it. Quick, how do we do that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely very much with me. I mean, you know, like doing Land Speed Records and things, you know. I mean, I'm really good at straight line stuff, right? I mean, when it comes to a bend, I'm rubbish. You know, I run out of talent. You know? Yeah. But straight line, I see this red mist, you know, and I just go for it. And hence with Alan, you know, we hold the world land speed record for 2 up, for instance. You know, I've got a record too, a record at Bonneville for Brough Superior, etc. So look, yes, I say yes to things, then think about how to sort it out. And my managing director, Hamish, he always says to me, let's just say yes and we'll wing it.
Brilliant. Yeah.
And I go, actually, no, that's not right. I'm the one who says that. He's the one who goes, are you absolutely sure? Yeah. And so I've just blamed him on him. You know.
I love the way you say anything in a straight line. You're same as me. You'll go for it. But being a pillion at 183 miles an hour, trusting Alan, I mean, that's different, isn't it? When you're hanging on and you're trusting someone else, there must have been a bit of fear inside then.
Not really. No? I'll tell you why, Ewan. Not because I'm hard or in any shape or form. But the thing is that Alan, he is the most sort of, he's an engineer, okay? So consequently, everything that he does, there is safety factor laid into it, right? So consequently, if I'm hanging on to him, the only thing that I was worried about is I'm quite fat, right? I mean, well, I'll call myself tubby, okay? Alan would call me a sack of concrete, right? But basically, when I was holding on to him at 180, whatever it was, I'm really worried that he's going to snap, yeah? He's so thin. You know, so, you know, as far as I was concerned, I wasn't worried about him and his riding because he's just the best. I was worried, obviously, you're always worried about something technically going wrong. Yeah, obviously. But dear Alan, he's so meticulous and, you know, every step slowly, gently. So to the point where if I do a land speed record, right, I'll just go for it. I'll do what I'm told and I'll go for it. Right. But it ended up that I sat on the back of that bike for 36 miles at an average speed of 169 miles an hour, because he was just slowly increments. We'll try this one. It's just, bloody hell, Alan, just do it. You know?
Can you, given the fact of where it is, given the fact where these records take place, Henry, can you describe what that average is and 183 miles an hour feels like? Because I presume, is it just literally everything a blur? Is it just time slowed down? What is it like?
At Elvington, and what's interesting, at Bonneville as well, there is no real reference point, right? Especially at Bonneville. So let's say when I was doing a record on the Brough at Bonneville, you know, I was only doing 100 miles an hour. It's a 1927 bike. Do you know what I mean? All you're looking at is the revs, okay? 4,800. I need to stick at 4,800. That's what Sammy told me to do. That's what I did. You don't really realise how fast you're going, you know? And also, doing the two-up record, for instance, I found the best way to crouch out of the wind was to actually look at the floor.
Right.
So I didn't know what happened, basically. I was just this sort of appendage on the back of Alan.
That's really interesting that there's no point of comparison. I never thought about that, because let's imagine in my dream once I did 184 on the A50, the lampposts were going, bah, 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 bah. And when I slowed down to 70, it genuinely felt like I could step off and run next to the bike. It felt so slow. But when you're going at such speeds, like you said on Bonneville, you haven't got the comparison. There's nothing trees.
There's no reference.
Feel weird. Yeah.
Yeah, no reference at all. And so consequently, I've got to, in a minute, Alan, for the National Motorcycle Museum last year gave Alan a challenge, right? And that was to, there was a V8 motorcycle, V8 powered motorcycle called the Nemesis at the National Motorcycle Museum. And it's never run, okay? Now, it was built in like the mid and late 90s. And Motorcycle News actually had to have someone push it down a hill to take the photos of it rising. So the story goes. Because it never really ran, okay? Or that's how we know. I mean, that's allegedly, I don't know. But, you know, bottom line is they said, look, Alan, would you do it up and get it running? Henry, would you make a show about actually getting the record, the V8 record, which only stands at 136 miles an hour? Because it was set in 1908 by a geezer who had a V8 Curtiss engine and a wheelbarrow, basically. I mean, you know, if you look it up, it looks like he's got two-wheelbarrow. And he did 136 miles. I mean, the guy was absolutely wired up to the wrong miles bar, do you know what I mean? So for us, it should be relatively straightforward to do it. But we did do a test ride last year when Alan had fiddled with it a little bit and I blew it up, right? So this time it's running beautifully. So we are going to go to Elvington in a minute and try and get that VA record. But again, because Alan's built it, right, and he's re-engineered everything on it, am I worried? Well, I got my fingers on the clutch. Yeah, sure. And it might go bang. But, you know, it's better than getting run over on the North Circuit, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? If you are going to buy it, you know, I was attempting a V8 record, a land speed record on this Nemesis, and it went wrong. So that's how your dad died, was it? Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, cool. All right. You know, so you know, I think of it like that in a way. You know, I mean, I tried to, you know, live fast, die young. That didn't work. I'm 61.
Still going.
You're still going strong.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Can you talk about these wonderful adventures, and we've seen so many of them, and the records and stuff. Can you remember, I mean this in the nicest possible sense, but when you first passed your test, that sense of accomplishment that has opened up this whole life, professional and personal, to you, that's still going strong now?
Yeah. Hey, look, when I passed my test, it was purely that I wanted to go biking, obviously, like all of us. Yeah. It wasn't, oh, I'm going to make a career out of this. I mean, that was a dream that came true further down the line, obviously. But do you know what? Life is about, as you get older, perhaps it isn't about materialism and all that kind of stuff. It's about satisfaction and contentment. And I don't think, I really feel that contentment, you know, is illustrated by passing your bike test. You know, you've achieved something that you kind of always wanted to do, yeah? And you've passed it. You've kind of endorsed the fact that hang on a sec, you're okay. You know, you can do something. It's like Ed, who works for me here, right? There's a load of reprobates who work for me. And Ed's just passed his bike test after a couple of years of sort of, you know, on the old L plates or whatever. I lent him a 125 to learn on. And he's just passed his test. And, man, I can just see that, you know, smile on his face, man. That sort of feeling of contentment.
We've spoken about it on here before. Sorry to jump in. It's like when you pass your car test, it's a necessity. You need your license. Everyone needs it. But you pass your bike test because you want to pass your bike test.
Yeah, definitely.
Not because your parents have probably said, get your bike license. You need that in life. We all do that with cars. But for me, when I passed my bike test, it was the moment of ripping the L plates. And it was the freedom of like, wow, I can go anywhere I want in my own time on two wheels. And it was cool. Because my mates hadn't passed their bike test either. Most of them were into their cars, but I was always into two wheels because of my dad. But it is that freedom, isn't it? It's that, and I can see the joy in your face for the lad who works for you. It's not you can feel he's now done something. It's great.
Yeah. But then I have another lad called Rob who works for me, who has got his bike test, but he continues to ride a 125 Shadow or something. I mean, it's a horrible thing. And, you know, we're out here in the boonies in the country. And, you know, when it's freezing and there's ice and he's coming to work, I wake up in the morning and I think, oh, my God, is Rob going to make it? Should we get him a lift or something? Do you know what I mean? Because he refuses to take his car test, you know. Anyway, good boy. But, look, motorcycle, I'll tell you what's great, isn't it? When you pass your bike test, you kind of, you've done the initiation into a motorcycle club, which is a worldwide club of kindred spirits. And you know what? I mean, I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous, right? Because I was an old junkie. I've been clean for 35 years. But I can go around the world, go to an NA meeting and meet a lot of people, right? Who were all like me, you know, just trying to get their crap together. But as a motorcyclist, if you're riding around the world, if you're riding anywhere, if you go anywhere, there are people there who you can meet, who will look after you, who will help you out by the side of the road, do their thing. Isn't it great to pass that little motorcycle test? But what the doors open to a world of, you know, kindred spirits. And you know, to me, that is such a fantastic thing. I mean, I guess if you're into scuba diving or tiddlywinks, you know, you're going to meet those kind of people as well.
I think the beauty with biking, you don't all come from the same walk of life. Like you said, you get a scuba diver who's really into that, whatever, you know. But you get a biker and you get different shapes and sizes. You've got different personalities. But as you said, you've got that bond. Someone will help you by the side of the road or someone will stop to talk to you about your bike, you know. And we've said about it, and we Prats, it's like a brotherhood, if you want. It's whatever it is, it's unique and it's only with biking.
Yeah, so I've got to tell you, man. Right, okay. Sorry, I don't. Name dropping is not my way forward. But there was just one situation the other day when a guy came up to me and he goes, "Henry, you know, it's so great to see my motorcycling on TV. You know, I myself, I love biking and that kind of stuff." I turned around, it's Simon Le Bon.
Wow,
right? Of course. It's just like, mate, how sweet of you. I idolised you. Do you know what I mean? I thought you were the coolest thing since sliced bread. Still do, right? Yeah. But motorcycling brings you together, and it doesn't matter when you're riding a Bantam D1, which a guy was asking me last night after the gig to see if I could find him one. We'll try. He's left his details, right? Whether it's a Bantam D1 or whether it's a Gixxer or whether it's Simon, I don't know, buying a Vincent Black Shadow, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What matters is that we're involved in taking part in something that is really quite amazing. You know?
Yeah, and it brings us together. And as you say, it's bigger than all of us, isn't it, really, when it comes down to the really important stuff. Right, we've got a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. Now, Henry, given what you've spoken about so far with bike, not necessarily ownership, but enjoyment of, I presume, you mentioned you shed a few times. I'm picturing something that's not quite shed size and I'm full of bikes. Would we be right in thinking that?
Now, look, my wife, I don't think, is listening to this, right? So I think I can be quite candid. I actually have, if I'm honest with you, I've got 13 sheds.
Right. I thought you were going to say 13 bikes, 13 sheds.
No, now listen, right? I'm not being arrogant, okay? Some of them are for work. They're studios for ITV and shed. They're sheds, but with lighting in them for, you know, Discovery, ITV, Channel 4 and You and Yesterday, right? And I kind of, I think I've got a problem, actually.
I've never met someone with a shed addiction. I must admit, we've spoken to some people, but I've got a problem. I like wood. I like sheds.
I love them. I do. I've written a book, The Life-Changing Magic of Sheds, and in it are chapters on biscuits, right, and stuff like that, and tea, yeah? Because it's critical to get the... God, what am I talking about? Honestly, really. But it's true. It's my life.
What's your go-to tea? I need to know what your go-to tea bag is then, because I'm not a connoisseur, but I love a good, strong tea. I've got my favourite.
Look, I do like Yorkshire tea.
Yeah, 100%. Thank you very much.
That's the only answer.
What about Yorkshire Gold? Have you gone the next level up? It's very strong. Oh. Have you tried the Yorkshire Gold?
We have.
Yeah.
And we imbibe in that on a regular basis, and also just the straight up Yorkshire. Shall I tell you, though, a geezer bought me a really posh load of tea bags from Fortnum & Mason's.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah.
They were called Royal something. Bloody hell, they were fantastic.
Better than Yorkshire.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, but they were good, okay? For a southerner's attempt. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were good. Look, tea is all about, I'll tell you what, look, we're shed dwelling. Look, the sheds are full of motorbikes, I'm afraid. They've got full of cars, and they've got a helicopter in at the moment because we're restoring it for a show. Yeah. All right. It's because I'm obsessed with old vintage stuff. And I found this Bell 47, you know, those MASH helicopters.
Yeah.
You know, I found one of them in a shed. And I stupidly said to Discovery, why don't we do this as a you know, thing? Blimey, they said yes. And so we have been restoring this helicopter for 2 years. Okay. It will be flying in May. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I say that. It may drop out of the sky, but it may at least get up, okay? Which, as a 60-year-old, is a privilege, right?
And, Henry,
we'll bring it to the Historic Army Air Flight open day on July the 12th, you know what I mean, down in Middle Wallop. But anyway, so look, shedding. Hey, I don't know about you, have you got sheds? You must
have. Yeah.
I've only got one, though. I'm sorry to disappoint, but it's a big one. It's a big one. I've got one.
You can either have little ones, right, or you can have a mega, yeah? Or you could just have, well, anything that isn't in the house, you know?
Yeah, very true.
So don't you find, right, in my little book, right, I sort of reflected on shed dwelling a lot, obviously, because it's a book about sheds. But I think it's much more personal to invite someone into your shed, right? So, look, your house, you ring the doorbell, you open it, delivery man comes in, right? Whatever happens, you know, the gas man comes to check, you know, the wife's got a friend, you know, the wife's got someone, perhaps not a friend, perhaps someone more than a friend. But the bottom line is that I can weigh up someone, right, wherever I meet them, and I think, oh, they're shed material. Yeah. Hey, mate, you want to come have a cup of scotch? In my shed, I'll show you the gear. You know.
So if you make it into Henry's shed, then you're a good person. You're all
you're
right.
You're all right.
You're all right.
If you make it to Prutz or Ewan's shed, you're a good person. You know, you invite someone in, right? As not a treat, but it's a very personal thing. Sheds. You know, the people you need to be aware of are the people who have locks on the inside of a shed.
Ooh.
Right. Okay.
Now, look, keep an eye out for that.
You can open my shed anytime you want, right? My shed door. Well, unless it's 3 o'clock in the morning and the padlock's on it, but you know what I mean. So, you know, I do worry about people who have locks on the inside. I'll tell you what, actually, sorry. I've got to tell you, I get invited into the weirdest sheds, okay, man? And I'm sure this geezer won't mind me telling you, right? But we're doing Find It, Fix It, Flog It down the South Coast somewhere. And I bought a load of crap off him and all that kind of stuff. And then he goes, you want to come see my other shed? And I think, oh, my God, I better bring someone with me. Yeah. Anyway, Tommy, my sound man, comes with me. Right. Oh, there you go, sir. I don't let many people in here, but you seem nice enough. And I said, okay. All right, mate. Yeah, let's have a look. He goes, what do you reckon? Opens the door. It's full of Daleks.
No.
Right? This geezer has collected probably over 200 Daleks, right? Some are remote control, some are full size, some are from the set, you know, from Doctor Who. Others are just sort of Chinese, you know, sort of replicas or whatever it is. Unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, people have the most amazing things in sheds. And I've got to tell you, man, I must have been in about 1,000 for TV. We've only just touched the sides, man. God knows what's out there. And that's what's so exciting.
Yeah, you get that kind of shudder, don't you? Like the childhood version of yourself that saw Daleks on TV and shitting yourself going, oh my God, they're all on the same shed.
Yeah. Oh, mate, but Brooks, you're so right. Look, I get the same buzz going into a shed now as I used to as a 19-year-old going to a party. You're going through the front door of someone's house to a house party or something. You think, wow, you know, the woman of my dreams could be in here. We could have a right laugh. I'm going to get absolutely blottoed. What a fuck. I feel the same way, but totally different, obviously, going into someone's shed.
Is that the biggest surprise you've ever had then, Daleks? Because I can only imagine you open the door and whoa, like Dalek. I mean, that must be the most random shed thing you've seen.
Look, man. Look, there's some crazy stuff, right? I'm just trying to think. Okay, I go into a geezer's shed. He's got a thickin' howitzer, right? Piece of artillery piece. You know, what? Huge gun. What? On wheels, you know, one of those artillery. Yeah. What have you got one of them for? Oh, yeah. Oh, just bought it. Ah. You know, and you go, and you know, there's another shed I went into. Honestly, probably 100 tanks, military tanks. You know, but the craziest things as well that people collect, really odd stuff. The thing that I don't like is kiddies' toys.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Right? Not like little...
Vintage, you know, old stuff, yeah.
People creepy. Collect vintage, you know, scooters and push pedal cars and...
Yeah.
It's a bit, you know, when you said about seeing the helicopter and the wonderful time that we've had to chat so far, Henry, has been brilliant, but there's a real sense of mischief about you. Is there any, like, when you go, right, get on this, I'm going to ring Discovery, let's see if they'll say yes to that. Have you thought, what's the most outlandish thing we can try? And then when they say yeah, you go, oh, right,
yeah.
Got to go make it now.
Yeah. Hey, look, man, all the really good ideas you have as a TV producer, right, never get commissions.
Yeah.
The ones that you think are just fantastic, people just go, no, you're right, Henry, not really up for that. You know what I mean? But things that you think are utter crap, right,
that'll
get
never,
away.
Never get made.
Like I used to do a series called Stars and Cars, right? So as a laugh, I rang up Travel Channel years ago. I said, what about doing a show Stars and Spars? They go, we love it. That's great. Yeah. So, and the same happened with ITV. I rang them. I said, I want to do this series called Grime Fighters about clearing up rubbish, you know, just clearing it up, you know, house clearances, you know, dustmen on the tube. They went, oh, we love that. Well, we'll have that. And do you know what? It ran for 5 years. We made 170 of them.
Yes.
It ran. It replaced Coronation Street for a while.
Do you think your mind's different in terms of you're clearly very creative, but no, like you said, to come up with some of these most random programs, which the ITV or BBC execs, they love it. Do you think you're wired slightly different? Because I think you're amazing. You're clearly quite eccentric. You know, you're fun. But how do you come up with some of these ideas? Are they just strange dreams of yours?
The concern is with ease. Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to think of other stuff. But, you know, the thing is that you have to look at TV. TV is very risk averse, right? So consequently, you know, they won't commission something that has never been seen before. But then again, they say they're looking for something that has never been seen before, but they don't know what that is, right? So you have to try and educate as well as sell some of the times. So the way to get across that, like with motorcycling, you know, I did Stars and Cars, etc., and then I went to Travel Channel. They called me in. This is years and years ago. Travel Channel have been bought by Warner Brothers now, but anyway. And Richard, the boss there, went, oh, Henry, now what do you want to do? I said, look, I want to do Great Drives of the World, Yeah. I thought of that as I was walking up the stairs. Okay. He went, oh, we'll have that. That'd be lovely. Great. I said, but can I do it on a motorbike? He goes, no, motorcycles won't break. No. I went, all right, well, look, I'll go around the world then for you in a car. So I go around the world in a car for him, right? This is like 25 years ago. And I come back and I go, what do you reckon? He goes, oh, they rated really well. I said, well, can I ride Route 66 now? Yeah. And he goes, no, can you do another round the world with a car, second series? I go, look, I'll only do that if I can ride Route 66. So he goes, okay, dear boy, go on, off you go. So anyway, 9 months later, I come back. I've been around. I mean, we'd run out of ideas. You know, the last show was a Mondeo, right, driving around Tenerife.
Jeez.
You know what I mean? I was just like, God, let's just get this last show out of the way. Where are we going? Oh, I've always wanted to go to Tenerife. Right, we'll go and hire a Mondeo. Anyway, so look, I come back, right, and I go, look, I'm going now. He goes, right, okay, go on then. Go to on Route 66. So I go to LA. No, sorry, go to Chicago, buy a Harley, ride to LA, come back, cut 7 shows, out it goes. And that, he just seemed to be amazed. He went, well, this rate's better than Great Drives. And I went, well, I think it would do because there's nothing on TV. Yeah. About it, but motorcycling, you know, also it's all about authenticity, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you are not passionate about motorcycles, people will see through that. Yeah. You know, and it's not about my stunning good looks and lack of teeth. Yeah. It is about, you know, authenticity and a passion for it. And I would be in a shed or doing that motorcycle ride without a bloody camera. Right.
But I think people can relate to that, can't they? People can right. see that you are yeah. real and you clearly love what you are talking about. And people can see through the bullshit when it's not real. So that's why it works.
And that's what it's all about. And that bike ride, right, you see, typical, broadcasters didn't believe that it would work, right? So 23 series later of World's Greatest Motorcycle Rides, of which we're going to do Great British Motorcycle Rides next year, you know, it shows work. I go to ITV. I say to dear Katie at ITV, she was at ITV, and I go, should we do the motorbike show? She goes, it won't rate. I went, oh, please. Look, I've just proved on Travel Channel, you know. And she goes, oh, God, all right, give me 2, but it won't rate. Anyway, I think last week it was there 3 times higher than anything else that was going out that week, you know, because, man, come on, you know, biking works. You know, it does work. And just as it should be the solution in transport, I think there should be more of it on TV. But
how does that make you feel, though, when you push for a program and they don't believe in it and you know it's going to work and it does? I'm not saying you then go 2 fingers up to you, I told you so. But how proud are you, though, that your creative ideas do come to the fore and work?
Do you know what, Ewan? I don't see it like that. That's kind of you. I can't see it like, look, we've had this stupid idea, right? We've made it work and we've got it commissioned and people seem to like it. If we are bringing some joy to people's houses, right? Like yesterday, for instance, just at Newark, you know, there were 600 people in the audience, you know, and afterwards, I always go out front afterwards to sign anything they want and all that kind of caper because I love meeting the people. But, you know, we obviously bring a lot of joy to people. And to me, that gives me the same satisfaction as passing my bike test, you know what I mean? It's not like, yeah, sure, we earn good money doing it. Of course we bloody do, do you know what I mean? You know, but at the end of the day, it's not about that, you know? It is about making people happy. You know, people come up to me and go, Henry, you got me through lockdown, you know? And, oh, my God, what a privilege is that? And people said to me, a guy said to me yesterday, they go, Henry, look, it's 11:30 and you're still signing, you know, books and things. It's like, don't you ever get bored of that? You know, don't you ever want to tell people to F off? I go, Jesus Christ, mate. It's humbling, you know, that people actually want to chat to you. They want to come and see you. You know, man, that's amazing, you know. And because I have so low self-worth, someone has to keep telling me that. I mean,
given this long and varied career that's just had so many different ports of call and has seen so many wonderful things, could you pick out a proudest moment, or is it in the kind of the minutiae of what your job is, the meeting of the people, the bringing together of people. Is that where, is that what gives you the most kind of inner type peace and composure? And that, going back to that word of passing you test, that joy, that contentment.
Hey, look, I mean, it's, yeah, motorcycling has been a huge part of that. But I think my biggest achievement was to get clean from heroin, basically. And I didn't do that on my own.
Henry, sorry to butt in, because this is something that we haven't spoken about with anybody
on
here.
Okay.
That sent, you know, and does that then, from the, and I don't want to kind of dial any of it down or kind of simplify any of it. Does that then give you inherently forever that different perspective on life, and in that way of it being transformative in every single possible way, that you are potentially a better person for having been through that and live a bigger, fuller, more colourful life for having seen that side of the coin that so many people fall into and never get out of?
Look, you know, we talked about, you know, I sort of went to Eton and all that kind of stuff. And you know, I was lucky enough that I was posh enough probably to be able to be allowed to have hope, right? You know, and a lot of people, and Guy, who's on TV with me, Skidler, he got me clean. You know, he was knocking on my door going, you can get clean, because he was a junkie as well, right? Mm. We were junkies together. And then, cut a very long story short, he took me to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I told them all to stick it, yeah? Mm. And then I realised that his way probably was the right way, because I was going to die, basically. So, you know, I'm 35 years clean now. I haven't had a drug or a drink since 88. So that was that 35, can't remember. But the bottom line is that it does give you a different perspective. And I'll tell you what it gives you is gratitude, right? Out of the 15 of us who were all public school rebels, wore black, rode me big motorcycles and took heroin, okay? And all would be in our 60s now, right? 15 out of the 15, 9 are dead, right? And there's 3 of us that are clean, okay? And that's not a good average, okay? So consequently, the ability for me to engage with people, and, you know, the people of Narcotics Anonymous got me clean, yeah? Because, you know, I didn't want to let them down. 2, they were hugely supportive. And 3, they made me see the light, is the wrong word because it sounds religious, but they made me see an alternative way of living where gratitude is prevalent. And, you know, if you're just, you know, like you in a, on a motorcycle, when you get in and you're warming up and you're having a cup of tea and a vape or whatever you are, you think, oh man, I'm safe, I'm warm, I'm cozy. You know, that's real feelings, okay? That other feelings are just ridiculous. My God, I've tried every single way of getting different feelings, yeah, by taking every single drug. But actually, contentment, yeah, and honesty with yourself is what it's all about, you know? And I've been taught that by taking a large amount of heroin. Yeah.
But you know what? We're massively grateful for your honesty and your openness to talk about that, because
thanks, man.
You'll clearly help others by talking, and you talk about gratitude. We're grateful not only for you for coming on here today, but obviously for changing your lifestyle and the amount of people who take joy from your programs. The 600 people in Newark last night who you kindly met, you know, I speak on behalf of everyone. We're pleased you're clean. We're pleased your life is going well. And keep making these amazing programs and doing what you do, because you are an inspiration. But we can't let you go without one final question, if we may, please. We want to find out from you, because clearly you've ridden some amazing roads. You've got a great close network of friends and people who work with you, and you've clearly ridden the most amazing bikes as well.
Yep.
Give us your dream fantasy ride. So you can ride anywhere in the world. You can be riding any bike. Who would you be, and what would be your soundtrack if you were listening to music? So, yeah, who would you be riding with? Where? What bike?
Okay, look, right. Oh, blimey, that is so difficult. Oh.
Well, is it Route 66, for example? You know, you wanted that program.
Look, I was going to say, I've done 17 different rides in America, okay? Now, riding the American dream, for me, is something incredibly special, mainly because, you know, I grew up with the whole movie thing and I loved it, and I grew up with the whole music stuff, you know, the indie rock of the West Coast, you know, the Bruce Springsteens, whatever it may be, is something that I absolutely embrace and love, as well as British punk. But anyway, another story. So come on, look, I would like to be riding a chop that Skid has built, probably one of our Gladstones, right? And I'd like to, I've never done New York to LA, right? I'd like to do that. I've done Route 66 three times. Fick it, I'll do it again if you want. You know what I mean? Fantastic. And I'll tell you what, I'd love to do it. I'd love to do it with Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, nice.
Right? Because I think, yeah, he may be a rock and roller. He may be one of the greatest, whatever. He just seems a really good bloke.
Yeah.
And that to me is what it's all about, you know? Mm-hmm. Or I'd like to do it with Skid, only because Skid's never done it, you know, Guy. And I would love to show him, because he loves a Harley, you know, he loves American stuff. So look, I think it's all about sharing motorcycling with your mates and experiencing, you know, stuff together and the stories on the road. And that's what it's all about. But I'll tell you what, one of my favourite roads, and I think it's the same with everybody, is your local ride.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like, you don't have to go to New Zealand or whatever to experience it. Yeah, sure, that's fantastic. But, you know, my favourite road is from Burford, right here, to Bybury, and then to Classic Motor Hub, my mate's place. You know, and it's just wide, sweeping A roads of 15 miles.
Yeah.
You know, I know every single bit of gravel, unfortunately. Yeah. And, you know, so look, I think, yes, there is the dream ride, but just to ride a motorcycle when the sun's out, yeah, of an evening after work, you know, and you got a lot of hassle and you go out on your bike, that's dreamy to me. Yeah. Never a nightmare on a bike.
No. Lovely. I like that. Never a nightmare on a bike. I quite like that.
It's true. Yeah. You know?
I mean, Henry, this has been amazing, illuminating, entertaining, insightful. My God, there's so much that you told us that I've got such a lot of time for. And as I said, huge fan, mate, coming into this, even bigger fan moving off the back of it. Because
you're so sweet, man. Thank you so much. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. And you guys are doing a great thing. So well, like, stick with it, man. You want to get back running, Ewan?
Yeah. I need my body's a bit broken, but yeah, I'll try.
You're not the only one, son.
Maybe that can be a little program. I can run from Southampton to your shed and get a Yorkshire cup of tea waiting for me at the finish line.
Yeah, mate, you're welcome anytime, both of you.
That's very kind, Henry. Of course, this is our podcast is very, very much to do with the support of Bike Show. They're absolutely wonderful, aren't they? You and the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bike Show, will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter, or moped insurance.
Yeah, they certainly will. I've got to say a huge thank you. I found this quite inspirational, this episode. Like, you're a wonderful man to listen to. You've got obviously great stories, great wisdom, great knowledge, and, you know, you've been a great guest. So thank you very much to the one and only brilliant Mr. Henry Cole.
It's an absolute pleasure, guys. Thank you so much.
And don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. And don't forget to look at Henry's website, henrycole.tv, to get all the tour dates to see Henry and Steve Parish in a theatre near you.
Yeah, thanks very much for listening. I'm off to my relatively small shed for hopefully a large cup of tea. Until next time, goodbye.